For the past 4 weeks in Bible study, we've been studying and discussing worldview. And as we've been preparing it, I've been thinking about maybe I should preach the sermon, a four-week sermon on worldview. But I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be like Bible study. This is just like an appetizer. So if you want to get the entree, the main course, you would have to come to Wednesday night. So talking about worldview, we ask, what is a worldview? A worldview is a set of assumptions that you have made through which you look at every choice and every decision that ultimately shape your value in your day-to-day life. A set of assumptions that you have made to which you look at every choice and every decision that ultimately shape how you think and how you behave. To put it simply, a worldview is the lens through which you look at life. A worldview is the lens through which you look at life. Practically every decision, every opinion, every matter that you think about is because of your worldview. For instance, when you think about abortion, whatever you think about abortion is a part of your worldview, what you think about life. Euthanasia, marriage, sexuality, war, whether the country should go to war or not. What do you think about marriage? What do you think about sexuality, euthanasia? All these things have to do with your worldview. Everyone has a worldview. Worldview is just like a belly button. No one talks, everyone has one, but no one really talks about it. It's your worldview. Wherever you stand on every major issue depends on your worldview. Therefore, you can easily say that your worldview is as indispensable for decision making as air is for breathing. Now, the question is, how are worldviews formed? Your worldview is formed as Gavel was displaying, your worldview is formed when you have a coherent answer to these four questions. Understand? In the word coherence, when you have a coherent answer to these four questions. Who am I? What is my life's purpose? How do I determine what is right and what is wrong? And what happens to me after I die? If you listen to someone long enough, you could tell what their worldview is. Even if they don't say it in this particular order or in this particular way, you will know what the person's worldview is. And this morning I would like to talk about the first one of these four, who am I? Two Australian sailors got off a boat in London and they wandered into the nightlife. They step into a pub and drunk until the early hours of the morning. And as they walk out completely drunk, wobbling in on their feet, not knowing where they are, they saw a man coming. But unknown to them, the man was a highly decorated English naval officer. And one of them said to him, "Say, mate, can you tell us where we are?" The officer, rather offended, he pointed to the medals on his uniform and said, "Do you guys know who I am?" One said to the other, "We are really in trouble now. We don't know where we are, and he doesn't know who he is." See, that is meant to be a joke. In fact, we did get a life. But that is the reality of our times. We human beings don't know who we are. The topic of this topic of human existence have been pondered for thousands of years. The ancient Greek philosophers like Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle all theorized about the answer to the question, who am I? And we are now in 2019 and we are still trying to figure out who we are. So let me ask you this question this morning. Who are you? Who are you? And this is a very important question that every Christian must have the answer to if you are to make an impact on this culture for God's kingdom. You gotta have a question, you gotta have an answer to this question if you're going to have to make an impact for God's kingdom in this culture. Joseph, you know Joseph in Genesis. He was betrayed by his brothers. He was thrown into a pit. He was sold into slavery. Unjustly put in jail. Cut off from his family, his people, and his church. You think you're living in a counterculture? Or he did. For many years, for almost two decades, he lived in a culture where a man is worshiped as God. Pharaoh was God to his people. Where he came from, there's only one God, and that is the God of the heavens. And now he finds himself in a place where a human being, where the king, where Pharaoh called himself God. He had to marry a pagan woman whose father was the priest of the sun god. Talking about counterculture. He had everything going against him and against his worldview. Yet everywhere he went, he made an impact. Everywhere he went, God was praised. Everywhere he went, lives were transformed. Now how can we, I hear Christian all the time crying and acting as if we lost the battle. The world is going crazy. The country is not the way it used to be anymore. Well, God called you to make an impact. God called you and me to impact this world. For it says, you are the salt of the earth. You give sense. You give taste to this world. And if this world is tasteless, it says a lot about us. It says a lot about you and the church. Here goes Joseph. In another country, sold by his brother, found himself in slavery, going to jail for nothing that he's done. But yet, whether he was in Israel, whether he was in that pit, whether he was a slave or a prisoner, Joseph had impact and that was impacting people's life. He made impact. And wherever he went, God was praised. The God of Joseph was praised. Wherever he was, life transformed. We live in uncertain time. A system that shouts against everything we believe in. You send your children to school. If you didn't do the work that you're supposed to do, if God had not already sealed them, you can lose them. Can lose them in the first semester if they take philosophy 101. What did Joseph know that you and I need to know? What did Joseph know that you and I need to know in order to impact this world? In order to make a difference, in order to change life, and in order that God's name may be praised among the nations. Joseph knew who he was. Wherever he was, he knew who he was. Listen to what the Bible says in Genesis chapter 39 verse 6b. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. With Joseph in charge, he He did not concern himself with anything except for the food he ate. Now, Joseph was well built and handsome. It's not any book that is saying this guy was well built and handsome. No, that's not what the Bible is talking. That's not what made him knew who he was. That he was well built and handsome. You know, one of the things that bothers me the most is when men stand in front of a mirror for half an hour getting dressed. You know, some people like to look at themselves. The Bible says he was well built and he was handsome. But that's not who he was. His outward appearance was not who he was. Listen to what the Bible says as we continue read Genesis chapter 39. The Bible says verse 7. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? Mind you, Joseph did not say, how can I do such a thing and sin against Potiphar? He could have been angry at God because he had a dream and revelation that God told him his brothers and the entire family is going to bow before him. And soon after, he found himself in a pit. Find himself in slavery. He could have said, I made myself. I'm my own man. God did not care. But even in his trouble, even though he's away from his culture, away from his church, away from his family, he was never away from God. Never allow himself to walk away from God. I want to tell you this morning, no matter what you're going to, cling to God. Kneel before him. Go on your face before him. Because you're going to need him. You're going to need him. When hard times come, you're going to need him. Joseph did not say, I can't do this to Potiphar. He said, I can't do this to my God. And if you can take other men from the Bible, but also David in Psalm 51 says, against you and you alone have I sinned. So the culture says this. That's what our educational system is teaching. That human beings are primates of evolutionary process. By accident from a single cell. Human beings are primates of evolutionary process by accident from a single cell. If you believe that, you're doomed. You see, Joseph knew who he was. You know why he knew he was? Because he knew whose he was. Joseph knew who he was because he knew whose he was. I don't know if you remember if you were here when I preached this sermon, but in Matthew chapter 22, verse 15 to 22, the Bible says, then the Pharisees went out and laid a plan to trap Jesus in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians. Teacher, they said, We know that you are a man of integrity, that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? So Jesus replied to them and said, give me a coin. But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me the coin used for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius, and he asked them, whose image is this? And whose inscription is on it? Caesar's, they replied. Then he said to them, so give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. And to God what is God. And when they heard this, they were amazed, so they left him and went away. Ravi Zacharias said, this is one question I hope Jesus answered differently. When they said, shall we pay taxes? He should have said no. Then you can be a rebel and righteous at the same time. But he says, show me a coin. Whose image is on this? They said, Caesar. So he says, then give Caesar what belongs to Caesar. And to God, what belonged to God. But if they were honest, what they would ask Jesus next is, what belongs to God? What belonged to God? And Jesus would say, whose image is on you? Whose image is on you? And since the coin belonged to Caesar, and therefore you must give it back to Caesar, then if God's image is on you, you should give your life back to God. Who are you? You're God's creation. Never forget that. This is absolute truth. You are God's creation. No, you're not an accident. You're not an accident. You were made in the image of God and in His likeness. You see, the Bible says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In the next verse, chapter 2, the Bible says, and the earth was tohu wabohu, and the earth was void and formless. And God wanted to make you. So he says, okay, I'm an interior designer. So I'm going to design the world with you in mind. I'm going to, yes, the earth was created, but it was void and formless. Then God says, I want to make man in my image, in my likeness. Then God says, let me make earth habitable. What I'm trying to tell you, all this you see, and if you look in the sky, telescope. If you look in the sky and see the wonders of this world, it was because of you. You're not an accident. God had you in mind before He created these things. It was for you, for your pleasure, for your purpose. You're not an accident. The Bible says in Genesis 1:26, then God said, let us make men. And how are we going to make them? We're going to make them in our image, in our likeness. Have you ever asked yourself what makes you human? What makes you human? What makes you human? Because the educational system says that you are a primate. Came from a single cell, which mutated itself, and then turned into a different animals until it gets human. And almost every scientist, serious scientist, know Darwin was wrong. Because for something to be scientifically correct, you have to be able to prove it, you have to be able to test it, and it has to be repeatable. We've never seen anything mutate themselves into something else. In fact, in the lab, they take bacteria. They could do whatever they want to the bacteria. Guess what? Bacteria remain bacteria. They take a DNA cell. They do whatever they want to it. It remains that very same cell. It does not happen. And they know that. The Bible says the fool says in his heart, there is no God. See, a lot of people put their attention on the fool. I put it on say in the heart. Because there's certain things you have to say it enough to believe it. And if you say it enough, you might believe it. Even when you know for sure that it's not it. What makes you human? What's the secret sauce? What makes you different than animals? Why can you think and animals cannot think? Why do you vacation and animals don't? Why do you celebrate birthdays? Why you worship? What's the secret sauce? You were made in the image of God. You were made in His likeness. You are the only creation that was made in His image and in His likeness. The only creature. The only creature. You are sacred. You are sacred. You're not an accident. Young people, you're going to go to college. You're going to walk this world. And people will want to tell you different. Hold tight to what you have. You're not an accident. God created this entire world with you in mind. You're special. You are special. Have you ever asked yourself, as I ask in Bible study, why is it okay to hunt deer in the United States, and it's not okay to hunt dogs? If you go out, you hunt dogs, you hunt deer, you come back with a good meal for some weeks. If you go out and hunt dogs, you might be going to jail for weeks. Now, what's the difference? What makes a deer life more a dog's life more valuable than a deer? They both are animals. The difference is that one of them has an owner. See, dogs in the United States are owned. They belong to somebody. But deer does not have owners. You belong to God. That's what makes your life sacred. If you look at the Ten Commandments, from the beginning to the end, all over it, it's written sacred. sacred. Thou shalt not, choose one. Thou shalt not kill. Why not? Because life is sacred. Sacredness means connecting to God. That's what the word sacred means. Simply, connecting to God. And because we're made in God's likeness, because we're made in His image, because He breathed into our nostril, we are connected to God, our life is sacred. Why should you not look to another man's wife? Because marriage is sacred. And I said in Bible study, somebody asked this question once. I think it was Ravi Zachariah who was doing something and a reporter came to him afterward and said, "Can I speak to you?" He says, "Yes, you can." The reporter walked to him and said, Why are you Christian against racism? But yet, you are against homosexuality." Ravi says, "The reason why we are against racism, because someone's race, ethnicity, is sacred. And sexuality is also sacred. God created sex for the union of marriage between a man and a woman. Your life is sacred." Next time somebody asks you, "Who are you?" you should look at them and say, "I'm God's masterpiece. I'm God's masterpiece." You cannot live your life any other way. But if you're any kind of way, if you know that you are God's masterpiece. Joseph knew who he was. And no matter where he was, whether it was in church or out of church, whether it was in Jerusalem or in Egypt, Joseph remained who he was because he knew he was God's masterpiece. You are God's masterpiece. Next time when you're going through all the things you go through, remember you are God's masterpiece. Don't give up. Whatever come your way, remember you are God's masterpiece. No matter what someone may tell you, no matter what someone ridicule you, someone look upon you and unfavorably, you don't have to be dismayed. You don't have to worry. You should be convinced in your heart, just like the psalmist says, "Who is man that you care for him? Who's the son of man that you're so mindful of him?" He was blown away. He's asking God, "Who am I that you make me your masterpiece? Who are you?" You're not an accident. You're not from a single cell. A primate from a single cell. You are God's masterpiece. If before I sit down and I ask you, "Who are you?" what's your answer? "I'm God's masterpiece." So. Jesus asked them, "Whose image is on the coin? Whose inscription is on it?" "It's Caesar's. So give to Caesar what belonged to him." "Whose image is on you? Give it back to God. Give your life away back to God." You see what happened Somebody ever were to believe in evolution? I don't believe sometimes people don't ask that question. Evolution cannot happen until life began. Then what is it going to evolve from? Evolution cannot happen until life began. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You're not an accident. Put that clearly in your mind. Because our children are buying this thing, and that's why they're committing suicide. Because they believe there's nothing to life. They are an accident. You're not an accident. You're God's masterpiece. And because you're God's masterpiece, your life is sacred. It belongs to God. It's not for you to do whatever you want with it. It's not for you to end it. It's not your own. It belongs to God. So no matter where you might be in life, no matter what happened to you in life, rest assured that you are God's masterpiece. So much so that he decided to send his son to die. His own son to die for your life. That's how important your life is to God. That he can exchange the life of his son for yours. You are special. And highly favored. You are God's masterpiece. So go home with your head lifted high. Walk with your shoulders back. Whatever problem it may be. Whatever. Maybe you can't pay your rent. Maybe you feel lonely. But look at yourself in the mirror. And say, I'm God's masterpiece. And he sent his only son to die so that I may have life and life more abundantly. God bless you.